Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the Bard's Grove.
Hi, Kat. How are you tonight?
Good. How are you, Lantern?
Very good. Very good.
I hope everyone's doing well. It's our first Friday the 13th of the year. There's only going to be three of them.
Really? We're getting shorted this year, huh?
Well, the thing is, I think there are probably most years there's only two or three. And, of course, so we're going to talk a little bit about Friday the 13th, because the rumor has it that it's an unlucky day and that it's evil, and that also it was connected with the Pope and the King of France went after the Templars. It was a Friday the 13th. It's very interesting because in ancient times, before all of this negativity about Friday the 13th, it was a very lucky day.
Really?
Yeah, it was the luckiest day of the week. What happened is that Friday is the goddesses, the great goddess's day, the goddess of love and sexuality and pleasure. Aphrodite in Greece, Venus in Rome, and Freya in the Germanic tradition. And go ahead.
I was just going to say, puts getting lucky in a whole new perspective.
It does. And the thing is that, on those days, Friday, we have Freya's day, Friday. So we even have it named after the goddess. And in many languages, it's named after the goddess of love and pleasure. So tonight, today, it's supposed to be a day of love and nurturing and pleasure and being with the ones you love. Instead of, it's unlucky. And the way that came about is a lot of the churchmen, they couldn't stop the people from celebrating and worshiping the goddess. And so they took it, like so many politicians do today, they take the truth and they twisted it 180 degrees. Of course, it's because they called the goddess, especially the goddess of sexuality, the devil. It was evil. Okay.
Well, I've got some stories about the devil, too, so we'll be covering some territory today, my dear.
Okay, great. Well, I'm going to take the love part, and you can take the devil part if you
Sounds
want.
Sounds like, and the devil take the hindmost.
Okay. So, anyway, the first thing I would like to do, so here we have this wonderful, wonderful day of love, and we have fear and love and luck, because 13 is also the goddess's number. There's 13 full moons or moon cycles within a lunar year. So it was a double whammy, if you will. And in many ancient cultures, it was a very lucky day. But of course, we've been told, and many people still believe it, that Friday the 13th is an unlucky day. And that's when I think some stalker guy goes around and kills people. So to set the record straight, I'm going to talk to you about love. The first thing I'm going to do is I'd love to recite to you one of the most beautiful, beautiful love poems in any culture, the Song of Songs from the Bible. And this beautiful love poem contains some of the most sensual and passionate images of love in Western culture, and it's a spiritual love, but it's also a physical passion as well. On one level, it was supposed to express the very physical love and desire of King Solomon and his bride, the Queen of Sheba. And on another level, the church took it to interpret it as God or Christ in his church. And another way that we could look at it, it's a very mystical expression of God's love for his people, and this includes both the Christian and the Jewish thought. And as a matter of fact, it's traditionally read on Friday evenings before the beginning of the Sabbath in the Jewish religion. The Sabbath is called the Sabbath Bride, and it's identified with the Shekinah, who in mystical Jewish tradition, like in the Kabbalah, is the feminine aspect of God. So every Friday, God marries his bride, Israel. So this beautiful, beautiful poem can be taken on all different levels, but I would definitely say that it is a wonderful night to take it on the sensual, physical, emotional level that it evokes. So if you will, I'm going to recite for you the Song of Solomon. The Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for thy love is better than wine. Because of the savor of thy good ointments, thy name is as ointment poured forth. Therefore do the virgins love thee. Draw me, we will run after thee. The king hath brought me into his chambers. We will be glad and rejoice in thee. We will remember thy love more than wine. The upright love thee. I am black but comely, O daughters of Jerusalem. I am black as the tents of Kedar, as the curtains of Solomon. Look not upon me because I am black, because the sun has looked upon me. My mother's children were angry with me. They made me the keeper of the vineyards, but mine own vineyard I have not kept. Tell me, O thou whom my soul loveth, where thou feedest, where thou makest thy flock to rest at noon. For why should I be as one that turneth aside from the flocks of thy companions? If thou know not, O thou fairest among women, go thy way forth by the footsteps of the flock and feed thy kids besides the shepherd's tent. I have compared thee, O my love, to a house of horses in Pharaoh's chariots. Thy cheeks are as comely as rows of jewels, thy neck as chains of gold. We will make thee borders of gold with studs of silver. While the king sits at his table, my spikenard sendeth forth the smell thereof. A bundle of myrrh is my well-beloved unto me. He shall lie all night between my breasts. My beloved is unto me as a cluster of camphor in the vineyards of En-Gedi. Behold, thou art fair, my love. Behold, thou art fair. Thou have dove's eyes. Behold, thou art fair, my beloved, yea, pleasant. Also our bed is green. The beams of our house are cedar, and our rafters are fir. I am the rose of Sharon and the lily of the valleys. As the lily among thorns, so is my love among the daughters. As the apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among the sons. I sat down under his shadow with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love. Stay me with flagons, comfort me with apples, for I am sick with love. His left hand is under my head, and his right hand doth embrace me. I charge you, you daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose, and by the hinds of the field, that you stir not up, nor awaken my love till he please. The voice of my beloved, behold, he come leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills. My beloved is like a roe or a young hart. Indeed, he stands behind our wall. He looks forth at the windows, showing himself through the lattice. My beloved speaks and says unto me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth. The time of the singing of birds is come, and the voice of the turtle is heard in our land. The fig tree putteth forth her green figs, and the vines with the tender grape give a good smell. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. O, my dove, thou art in the clefts in the rock, in the secret places in the stairs. Let me see your countenance. Let me hear your voice, for sweet is your voice, and your countenance is comely. Take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines are tender grapes. My beloved is mine, and I am his. He feeds among the lilies. Until the daybreak and the shadows flee away, turn, my beloved, and be thou like a roe or a young hart upon the mountains of Bethan. By night on my bed I sought him before whom my soul loves. I sought him, but I found him not. I will rise now and go about the city in the streets, and in the broad ways I will seek him whom my soul loveth. I seek him, but I find him not. The watchmen that go about the city found me, to whom I say, have you seen the one whom my soul loveth? It was but a little that I passed from them, but I found him whom my soul loveth. I held him and would not let him go until I had brought him into my mother's house and into the chamber of her that conceived me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose and by the hinds of the field, that you stir not up nor awaken my love till he please. Who is this that cometh out of the wilderness like pillars of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all powders of the merchant? Behold his bed, which is Solomon's. 70 valiant men are about it, of the valiant of Israel. They all hold swords, being expert in war. Every man hath his sword upon his thigh, because of fear in the night. King Solomon made himself a chariot of the wood of Lebanon. He made the pillars thereof of silver, the bottom of gold, the coverings of purple, the midst thereof being paved with love for the daughters of Jerusalem. Go forth, ye daughters of Zion, and behold King Solomon with the crown wherewith his mother crowned him in the day of his espousals and in the day of the gladness of his heart. Behold, thou art fair, my love. Behold, thou art fair. Thou hast dove eyes within thy locks. Your hair is as a flock of goats that appear on Mount Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of sheep that are even shorn, which come up from the washing. Thereof everyone bear twins, and none is barren. Thy lips are like a thread of scarlet, and thy speech is comely. Thy temples are like a piece of a pomegranate within thy locks. Thy neck is like the Tower of David built for an armory, whereupon there hang 1,000 bucklers, all shields of mighty men. Thy two breasts are like two young roes that are twins, which feed among the lilies. Until the daybreak and the shadows flee away, I will get me to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of frankincense. Thou art all fair, my love. There is no spot in thee. Come with me from Lebanon, my spouse, with me from Lebanon. Look at the top of Amana, from the top of Senir and Hermon, from the lion's dens, from the mountains of the leopards. You have ravished my heart, my sister, my spouse. You have ravished my heart with one of your eyes, with one chain of thy neck. How fair is your love, my sister, my spouse? How much better is thy love than wine, and the smell of thine ointments than all other spices? Your lips, O my spouse, drop as the honeycomb. Honey and milk are under thy tongue, and the smell of thy garments are like the smell of Lebanon. A garden enclosed is my sister, my spouse. A spring shut up, a fountain sealed. Thy plants are an orchard of pomegranates with pleasant fruits, camphor with spikenard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with all the trees of frankincense, myrrh and aloes, with all the chief spices. A fountain of gardens, a well of living waters and streams from Lebanon. Awake, O north wind, and come, thy south. Blow upon my garden, that the spices thereof may flow out. Let my beloved come into his garden and eat his pleasant fruits. And that's part of the Song of Songs, and I think I'll take a break now. But what amazes me about it is the sensuality of it, the cinnamon and the spikenard and the frankincense and the myrrh. He compares his love to all of these wonderfully rich textured smells and tastes and visions. What a wonderful way to celebrate love.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, he certainly seems to have an appreciation for the object of his affection, that's for sure.
Yes, and she for him. She for him.
Indeed.
Well, anyway, so that's one way we can celebrate that Friday the 13th. There's more in that beautiful poem, but I think that's all for now. If Lantern, if you have one of your devil stories, why don't
we... I do. I have a nice shorty here for you.
Okay.
And maybe you'll come back and do some more of the other kind of Friday the 13th tale. This is an old Slovak tale called How the Gypsy Outsmarted a Devil. A devil came to an old woman to get something to eat because he was half dead from hunger. She offered him an egg. But after the devil had swallowed the egg, the old woman told him that it contained an embryo from which a baby boy would be born. The frightened devil ran to a gypsy who was herding pigs out in the meadow and asked him for help.
Gladly, said the gypsy, just lie down here and relax.
The devil did as he was told. The gypsy began banging the devil on his stomach with a thick wooden spoon. The racket frightened a hidden rabbit that took off wildly across the meadow and into the forest. The gypsy watched him and said, "See, there goes your son. You don't have to worry any more that he'll come back."
"Good man," said the devil. "You wouldn't want to test your strength against mine, would you?"
"Why not?" said the gypsy. "Let's see which one of us can squeeze milk out of a stone." Well, the devil picked up a stone that was lying in the field and squeezed it so tightly in his fist that it crumbled to little tiny bits of stone. And when the devil wasn't looking, the gypsy secretly put a piece of milk-soaked bread between two stones. "Look," he shouted as he squeezed, and at once milk came trickling out from between his fingers. The devil was so frightened by the gypsy's strength, he ran off and didn't stop till he came to his mother's. "What are you so frightened of, my son?"
"A gypsy proved himself stronger than me," complained the devil.
"Well, that's not good," said his mother. "Well, he could hurt you worse. Go back to him once more and challenge him to a competition. If he's truly stronger, give him a bag of gold coins as a reward. But if he loses, then you can kill him."
The devil went back to the gypsy.
Well, what do you say we have a competition? If you win, I'll give you a bag full of gold coins. But if I prevail, you'll lose your life."
"Oh, that's fine with me," said the gypsy. "If you really want to compete, then we'll compete," said the gypsy. Well, first they decided to see who could carry the most plums. The devil began filling basket after basket, but the gypsy began uprooting whole trees.
"Why are you doing that?" wondered the devil.
"Well, why should I bother with each and every plum?" said the gypsy. "I'll just take home the plums along with the trees." Well, the devil began to worry that he would lose and said that they should see who could carry the most wood instead. Well, the devil started chopping away, and the forest began to disappear under his axe. The gypsy took a long rope and encircled the entire forest from oak to oak.
"What are you up to now?" asked the puzzled devil.
"I'm not going to put each one of those trees on my shoulder. I'll just circle the whole forest and pull up all the trees and carry them home," explained the gypsy. The devil realized he'd lose this time too, so he proposed they should see who could collect the most water. Well, the devil carried barrels to the stream and started filling them. The gypsy got some board and began to build a dam across the stream.
"Why are you making a pond?" asked the devil.
"Well, I'll just stop up all the water and collect it that way," reasoned the gypsy. Well, the devil became alarmed when he saw the gypsy was up to. He understood that the gypsy was stronger, and he just could not compete with him.
"Oh, you win," said the devil. "Here's your bag of gold coins. Now leave me alone."
The gypsy slung the bag over his shoulder and set off for home, happy that he had outsmarted a devil. Well, do you want to tell another one, Kat, or should I tell a little bit longer one?
Well, I can tell a quick little story about one of Aphrodite's love affairs.
Well, I think you should.
Okay. So in Greek myth, you know, they had to hook up the ancient goddesses with different gods. So they married Aphrodite, the goddess of love and sexuality and connection and spiritual vision, to Hephaestus, the lame goddess of the forge, the creator God, which in some ways might have made sense, but he was ugly and little and disfigured, and they married him to the greatest beauty of the age. So this is a story about Aphrodite's love affair with Ares, who's the god of war. And of course, we have that old saying, make love, not war, but love and war seem to go together. So anyway, Ares and Aphrodite had fallen passionately in love, and they were meeting clandestinely. Ares had given Aphrodite many beautiful gifts, and their passion was at its height. One night when they planned to meet at her husband Hephaestus' palace when he was away. But the son acted as a spy, and he told the lame smith of the deception. And consumed with fury, Hephaestus went straight to his anvil and began fashioning a mighty chain net of gold to catch them and hold them firm. Cunningly, he attached the chain to the bedpost with fine gossamer and made a show of leaving town. Now Ares, the god of war, who had been waiting for this opportunity, soon arrived to find Aphrodite waiting for him, full of desire for each other, full of a desire that was literally in the flames of delight. They made straight for the bedchamber and lay down. But just as the crafty old smith had devised, the golden net fell upon them so that they could neither escape nor move. Still acting as the spy, the son told Hephaestus of his catch, and the smith in his rage called out loudly to all the gods of Olympus to come and witness his betrayal. My cunning net is going to keep them fast until Father Zeus returns every one of the gifts I made him to win her. She may be his daughter and a lovely creature, but she's the slave of her passions. Roused by his angry cries, the gods of Olympus came to see what was afoot. Of course, the goddesses stayed home out of modesty. When Poseidon, Apollo, and Hermes all saw the couple, they burst out into uncontrollable laughter. But they all agreed that any one of them would switch places with Ares if they could be caught in the bonds with beautiful Aphrodite. Well, when the laughter subsided, they agreed that Ares should pay a fine, okay? Except for Hermes, who especially thought that he would risk anything for a tumble with the golden goddess. Finally, because Ares agreed to pay the fine, Hephaestus set them free, and they left. Ares went to the north of Greece, but Aphrodite went to her favorite shrine on Cyprus, where she bathed and oiled herself with her attendants, the Graces, and she became her own woman once again. And that is a quick story about Ares and Aphrodite. And once again, it's about the passion of love. That's why I think love was so frightening to most people, especially men, because what happens is that love can make you do things that aren't socially approved of. And with the patriarchy, there's so many laws about who can love and how people can love and what love is, that of course, I think at a certain point, they just decided, you know, this is just too much. We can't deal with it. So let's put it under the moniker of this is evil, instead of working out the hard work of being in love. So anyway, there's another great story. I'm sure that there were many Friday the 13th that Aphrodite and Ares spent together.
Oh, I suspect so, until the wee small hours in the morning.
You got it.
Well, this is a tale called The Tale of the Girl Who Was Sold to the Devil and Her Brother. Once upon a time, there lived a countryman and his old wife. He had three daughters, but he was very poor. One day, he and his young daughter went into the forest to gather mushrooms. And there he met a great lord. The old peasant bared his head, and frightened at the sight of the nobleman, said apologetically, "I'm not chopping your honor's wood with my hatchet. I am only gathering what is lying on the ground." "I would willingly give thee all this forest," replies the nobleman. And he then asks the peasant, "Is that his wife who is with him?" No, my lord, she is my daughter.
Wilt thou sell her to me?
Pray, my lord, do not mock and laugh at my daughter, since none but a great lady is a fitting match for your lordship.
That matters little to me. All thou hast to do is to sell her to me.
As the peasant did not name the price he asked for her, the nobleman gave him 2 handfuls of ducats. The peasant, quite enraptured, grasped the money. But instead of going home to his wife, he went to a Jew's. He asked the Jew to give him something to eat and drink. But the Jew refused, being certain that he had no money to pay him with. However, as soon as the peasant had showed him the large sum that he had, the delighted Jew seated him at the table and gave him food and drink. He made the old peasant drunk and stole away all his money. The peasant went home to his wife. She asked him where he'd left his daughter. Wife, I have placed her in service with the great lord. The wife asked if he had brought anything to her. He replied that he was himself angry, but that this nobleman had said to him that he had taken one daughter and that he would take the other two as well. The wife bade him take them away. He went away with these 2 daughters, and one of them he sold to another lord. This one gave him a hatful of money. The peasant said to his remaining daughter, "Wait for me here in the forest. I will bring thee something to eat and drink. Do not stray from here." He went to the same Jew that had robbed him of his money. The Jew again stole from him the money he had received from the other lord. The peasant returned to his daughter and brought her some bread, which she ate with delight. There came a 3rd nobleman who purchased this 3rd girl.
"Do not go to the Jew," said this lord to the peasant, "but go straight home to thy wife and hand over thy money to her, so that she may take charge of it, else the Jew will rob thee once more."
The peasant went home to his wife, who was very glad. The great lord spoke thus to him, "There is in a forest a beautiful castle covered with silver. Go to the town, buy some fine horses and harness, engage some peasants to work, and rest thou thyself, make the peasants do the work." He got into a carriage, took his peasants, and they set out with the help of God. They came by a magnificent road smooth as glass into a great forest. They met a beggar who asked this great lord, the peasant, once poor, now grown rich, where his daughters were. Soon after, these peasants discovered that they were clean bewildered. They find themselves surrounded by deep ravines and insurmountable obstacles, so that they cannot get out, for they have lost their way. There came an old beggar who asked them, "Why do you tarry here? Why are you not getting on?" "Alas," they answered, "we cannot get out of this. We had a beautiful road, but we've lost it." "Whip up your horses a bit," said the old man. "Perhaps they will go on." A lad touched up the horses, and all of a sudden the peasants see a magnificent road before them. They wish to thank the beggar, but he's vanished. The peasants fail to weeping, for they say to themselves, "This was no beggar. More likely it was the good God himself." They reach the castle. The peasant is in ecstasies with it. The peasants work for him, and he and his wife take their ease. 10 years roll by. Once he had 3 daughters whom he had already forgotten. "The good God," said he, "gave me 3 daughters, but I have never yet had a son." One day the good God so ordered that this peasant woman was brought to bed. She was delivered, pray excuse me, of a boy. The boy grew exceedingly. He was already 3 years old. He was very intelligent. When he was 12 years old, the father put him into a school. He was an apt scholar. He soon knew German and could read anything. One day this boy, having returned home, asked his father, "How do you do, father?" The mother gave him some food and sent him on to bed. The next day he got up and went to school. 2 little boys who passed along said the one to the other, "There goes that little boy whose father sold his daughters to the devils." The boy reached the school filled with anger, and he wrote his tasks quickly, for he could not calm his angry feelings. He went home to his father as quickly as possible. He took 2 pistols and called on his father to come to him. As soon as his father came into the room, the boy locked the door on them both. "Now, father, tell me the truth. Have I ever had any sisters? If you do not confess the truth to me, I will fire one of these pistols at you and the other at myself." The father answered, "You had 3 sisters, my child, but I have sold them to I know not whom." He sent his own father to town and bade him, "Buy for me, father, an apple weighing 1 pound. Father came back home and gave the apple to his son. The latter was delighted with it, and he made preparations to go out into the world. He embraced his father and mother. "Good God be with you," he said to them. "It may be that I shall never see you more. Perchance I may perish." He came to a field where he saw two boys fighting terribly. The father of these two boys had, when dying, left to one a cloak and the other a saddle. The little boy went up to these boys and asked them, "What are you fighting about?" "Excuse us, my lord," replied the younger. "Our parents are dead. They have left us one cloak and the other a saddle. My elder brother wants to take both cloak and saddle and not to give me anything." The little nobleman said to them, "Come now, I will put you right. Here is an apple which I will throw far out into this field, and whichever you get to it first shall have both of these things." He flung away the apple, but while the boys were running to get it, this little nobleman purloined both the cloak and the saddle. He resumed his journey. He went away with the help of God. He came to a field, stopped, examined the cloak he had just stolen, and to the saddle he cried, "Bear me away where my youngest sister lives." The saddle took hold of him, lifted him into the air, and carried him to the dwelling of his youngest sister. He cried to his younger sister, "Let me in, sister." Her answer was, 20 years I have been here, and I have never seen anybody all that time, and you will break my slumber. Sister, if you do not believe I am your brother, here is a handkerchief which will prove that I am." The sister read thereon the names of her father, her mother, and her brother. Then she let him in, and fainted away. "Where am I to hide you now, brother? For if my husband comes, he will devour you." "Have no fear on my account," he replied. "I have a cloak which renders me invisible whenever I wear it." The husband came home. She served some food to him, and then, employing a little artifice, "Husband," she said, "I dreamt I had a brother."
"Well, very good. If he were to come here, you would not harm him, would you, husband?"
"What harm should I do to him? I would give him something to eat and to drink." At this she called out, "Brother, let my husband see you." The young lad's brother-in-law saw him, and he was greatly pleased with his appearance. He gave him food and something to drink. He went out and called his brothers. They, well satisfied with the state of things, entered along with the boy's two other sisters. The latter were brimming over with delight. A lovely lady also came who enchanted him. "Is this young lady married?" he asked his sister. "No," she replied. "She has no husband. You can marry her if you like." They fell in love with each other. They were married. 10 years they lived there. At last this youth said to his sister, "I must return home to my father. Perchance he is dead by now." He got up the next morning. Brother-in-law gave him a large sum of gold and silver. They drew near the house, he and his wife. Not far from this house was a small wood through which they had to pass. And in it they noticed a beautiful wand. "Let us take this wand," he said to his wife. "It's very pretty, and we'll plant it at home." He obeyed her and took the wand. He reached the house. His father was very happy the son was now married. 5 years passed away. The good God gave them a son. He went to the church to invite the godfathers. And after the christening, they came back from the church. They ate, they drank, and at last everyone went away. He remained alone with his wife. One day he went to town. When he came home, he saw that his wife was no longer there, and that a sapling had also disappeared. It was no sapling, but a demon. He began to lament. "Why do you lament?" asked his father. "Do not anger me, father," he said, for I am going out into the world." He got ready for the road and set out. He came to a great forest. It was beginning to rain. He took shelter under an oak, and in that very oak his wife was concealed. He slept for a little while, and then he heard a child weeping. "Who is that crying?" he asked of his wife. "It is your child." And he recognized her and cried, "Wife, hearken unto me. What am I to say to you? Ask this dragon of yours where it is that he hides the key to the house." "Very well," she assented. The dragon came home. She flung her arms around his neck and said to him, "Husband, tell me truly, where is the key of our house?" "What good would it do if I told you?" he replied. "Well, then listen. In a certain forest there is a great cask. Inside this cask there is a cow. In this cow there is a calf. In this calf there is a goose. In this goose is a duck. In this duck an egg. And inside this egg is the key to be found." "Very good. That's the one secret I know." She then asked him wherein lay his strength. The dragon owned this to his wife. "When I am dressed as a lord, I cannot be killed. Neither could anyone kill me when I am dressed as a king. But it's only at the moment that I am putting on my boots that I can be killed." "Very good. Now I know both the secrets." He smiled at his father. All three brothers-in-law appeared beside him. They lay in wait at the moment when the dragon was drawing on his boots, and they slew him. They betook themselves to the forest. They smashed the cask. They killed the cow that was inside it. They killed the goose that was inside the calf, and then the duck that was inside the goose. Then they broke open the egg, and they drew out the key. He took the key. He came back to where his wife was. He opened the oak and let his wife out. "Now, my brothers-in-law, let good God be with you. And as for me,
I'm setting out to follow my way of happiness. Now I shall no more encounter any evil thing. And there ends the story, the tale of a girl who was sold to the devil and of her brother.
Wow. Oh. You know, they're always selling off people to the devil. I don't know.
Well, you know, there's always a danger when you go back in time and tell these old legends that some of the pluses and minuses, the myths, the legends, tell tales of a little bit of human prejudice now and then. And truly, that's often part of these tales.
Yeah, definitely. Most definitely. So do you have another story you'd like to say?
Or? Why, I certainly do, unless you'd like to tell another one.
Okay, well, I have a little one I can do, another love story, if you will.
Go ahead.
This is about Aphrodite once again and Adonis. One day, the wife of King Cinyras the Cyprian foolishly boasted that her daughter Sama was more beautiful than Aphrodite. Well, the goddess avenged this by making Samara fall in love with her own father. She went to his bed one dark night when he got too drunk to realize what he was doing. When he discovered that he was the father of his daughter's unborn child, he chased her from his palace. He overtook her and raised his sword to kill her, but Aphrodite turned her into a myrrh tree, which his sword cut in half, and out tumbled the infant Adonis. Well, now Aphrodite repented the mischief she had made, and she took the child and concealed him in a chest, which she entrusted to Persephone, the queen of the dead. She told her to put the chest away in a dark place. But Persephone was curious and opened the chest and found Adonis inside. He was so lovely that she lifted him out and brought him up in her own palace. When the news reached Aphrodite, she returned at once to claim him. But Persephone would not consent to this, for she had already made Adonis one of her lovers. She appealed to Zeus, but he would have nothing to do with the dispute, for he knew that Aphrodite also wanted him as a lover. So the muse Calliope was made the judge, and she decreed that one-third of the year Adonis would be with Persephone, one-third of the time with Aphrodite, and one-third was reserved for himself. But Adonis gave over his time to Aphrodite, and they begrudged his time with Persephone. Persephone, in anger, told Ares of Aphrodite's love for Adonis, and the god of war became jealous. So he disguised himself as a wild boar and rushed at Adonis while he was hunting. And he gorged him to death before Aphrodite's eyes. And anemones sprang up from his blood. And so Adonis' soul went to Persephone's realm, but Aphrodite got Zeus to promise that Adonis would return to her each summer, and he did. Well, that was a love story about the dying and rising god. But also, it's that story of... sometimes it reminds me of a love story because the women in Greece, they would make Adonis gardens, and they would plant seeds in a very shallow pan so that the seeds would blossom right away, quickly, and then die out. And so to me, that's that quick, hot, passionate love affair. That might be a good thing to have on Friday the 13th.
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, there's many, many stories about love throughout in the ancient world. And they're not so different from us. They're not so different.
Well, speaking of not so different, this is the tale of Boleslav, youngest of 12. There was a king who groaned many a day, and doctors came from far and near, but they could not cure him. At last, his condition was such that one day all thought he must die. The following night, he had a marvelous dream. It seemed to him that he was on Black Island. He had freed three princesses and straightway recovered. When he woke, he felt a certain relief, but had almost forgotten the dream. The next night, he had the same dream, and again on waking, felt easier, but did not ascribe the relief to his dream. The third night, he had no dream, but a vision in which three princesses appeared to him and said, "Free us,
and thou wilt recover. If not, thou wilt die. Then they vanished, and the terrified king felt such pain that he could barely wait till morning. He summoned his 12 sons in haste, and when he told them of his vision, he said in a sad voice, "But how can I, poor man, go on a long journey to Black Island, of which I have never even heard? But I will go instead of thee," said Boleslav, the youngest son, with decision. "We will all go," said the others, looking angrily at Boleslav, whom they hated with all their hearts because he was his father's favorite. "Ye cannot all leave me, and thou, Boleslav, certainly not you," said the king, shaking his head. "Who would there be to reign in my place?" "Let Boleslav stay home," said eldest. "Besides, he would merely be a hindrance to us on the road." "La hindrance," said Boleslav, flushing up with anger and pity. "Let me go, father. I will free the princesses alone." His brothers began to laugh at him, and then to dispute as to who should go to Black Island. Since they could not decide, the king said, "I know that you would all gladly serve me, but since some of you must stay at home, I will make 6 blank lots and 6 written ones. Whoever draws a written one will go, whoever a blank will remain." The princes were satisfied, and they drew lots. They were angry when Boleslav drew a prize, and the king was sad. But he had given his word and could not withdraw it. That very day, the princes set out, and Boleslav with them. While on dry land, they were prosperous. It was worse when they entered a boat and knew not whither to turn. Boleslav said that they ought to go north, but his brothers laughed at him. And when they'd sailed many, many weeks in one direction and then another without finding Black Island, they were glad to follow his advice. And on the third day, they arrived at the place. But so terrible was it that no one dared to land save Boleslav. He took provisions and sprang on shore, telling his brothers to wait his return. While light lasted, he ran up and down on the island, but saw nothing except black rocks. He was forced to pass the night on a bare stone. But he rose early. Completely refreshed by sleep, he examined further. One day passed, and then a second. A third day appeared, and still he found nothing. At last, in the evening, he came to a large stone, which seemed to him hewn out by men's hands. He lifted with all his might, turned it over, and found a great dark opening, from which rose a pleasant odor. Down he went without delay, and soon found himself in a glorious garden in which were 3 golden castles at a great distance. He gazed with astonishment, though there were things there without number, such as he had never seen before. Still, his attention was attracted first by the 3 horses, which rushed around him 3 times in a wild gallop, and then vanished in the twinkle of an eye. Boleslav looked after them and heard a voice crying, "I welcome thee, Boleslav, youngest of 12. He looked on every side, but could see no one. The voice cried out a second time, "I welcome thee, Boleslav, youngest of 12. Now he knew where the voice came from, but though he went in that direction and examined everything very carefully, he could see no one. Only after the voice had called out much louder than the first and second time, "I welcome thee, Boleslav, youngest of 12, did he see behind a rock a famished little horse, so poor he could count every one of his ribs. "What dost thou want of me?" asked Boleslav, not a little astonished that the horse knew him. "It's my wish to free the 3 princesses," answered the horse. "Then listen to what I advise. In the first castle, thou wilt find the first princess, who will greet thee with kindness beyond measure, and offer thee food and drink, eat with relish. But let not the princess eat with thee or kiss thee. Take what is left of the food when thou hast eaten, and go to the second castle. There the second princess will greet thee with still greater kindness, and offer food and drink. Eat with relish, but for no reason let her eat with thee or kiss thee.
take what is left after eating and go to the third castle, where the third princess will give thee the most kindly reception of all, and place food and drink before thee. Eat freely, but let not the princess eat with thee or kiss thee. Take what is left and come here to me. Is nothing more needed to gain their freedom? Asked Boyslav. Nothing, answered the horse, but thou must not speak a word all this time. That is very easy, thought Boyslav. But the horse said with great emphasis, have a care, for to thee 'tis a question of life or death. Boyslav went with a quick step to the first castle, where a princess of wonderful beauty ran forth toward him. I welcome thee, Boyslav, youngest of 12, cried she, with glad voice. How art thou? Come to my chamber. Let me give thee good cheer. What is thy father doing? How are thy brothers? Then she took his hand, seated him at the table, to which she brought the most savory food and drink, continually speaking of his home. But he gave no regard. And when she wished to eat with him, he thrust her aside without mercy. Then he seized what was left of the food and hurried away. The princess gave him the sweetest of names and stretched her hands toward him, but he acted as if he neither saw her nor heard her. At the second castle, a still more beautiful princess ran toward him, greeted him with greater gladness, led him into a chamber, seated him at a table, and brought the most savory food and drink. Talking continually, she moved toward him, wishing to kiss him, but he thrust her away very rudely, so that she fell to the floor. Before she could rise, he had taken what was left of the food and was gone. He had barely reached the third castle when a princess ran out to meet him. She was far more beautiful even than the other two, and she wished to fall on his neck straight away. He was amazed at her beauty, but keeping in mind the words of the horse, he thrust her away. But she still led him into the castle, seated him at a table in the loftiest chamber, entertained him with the best food and drink. Boyslav ate and drank heartily, but when the princess wished to eat, he pushed her aside so rudely that after staggering a few steps, she fell to the floor. Quickly, then gathering the remnants of the food, he ran off, though the princess called him with heart-rending voice. When he came to the horse, he spread on a rock the remnants of the food, which the horse devoured eagerly. What now? Asked Boyslav. Go for the three princesses. Bring them to thy brothers in the boat. They are free, for they are the horses which thou hast seen running around thee. A wicked sorceress enchanted them, so that 12 hours they were horses and 12 hours princesses. They will then come for me, or thou wilt suffer. Boyslav did as the horse desired, and brought to his brothers the three princesses, who with tearful eyes thanked him for their liberation. Then he returned to the horse, which then, with sad voice, too bad, too bad. What has happened? Thou art unfortunate, answered the horse. Thy departure from home was unfortunate, for know that thy brothers have gone. Then I must perish here, said Boyslav. Now thou wilt not perish, but hast thou gone on the boat, thy death would be sure, for thy brothers had conspired to kill thee. Oh, the thankless wretches, cried Boyslav. What shall I do now? If thou wilt obey me, said the horse, thou wilt gain thy object in time. Go now to the garden of the first castle and pluck 4 golden apples, but only 4. Boyslav went, and for the first time noticed the beauty of the whole garden. He went back and forth and would have soon forgotten the apples had he not heard the neighing of the horse. Now he saw the tree with golden apples and plucked 4. Since they were so beautiful, he wanted more, but the horse neighed so fiercely that the whole castle trembled. His arm, which was stretched to the apples, dropped of itself, and he returned to the horse, which said, now sit on me. Boyslav did so, and the horse bore him soon to the shore of the sea, and said, throw an apple in the sea. Oh, but it's such a pity to lose it. Throw it in, said the horse. with a stern voice. And Boyaslav obeyed. That moment, a road 500 miles long rose out of the sea. The horse stepped on the road and hurried along night and day. When the domes of the great city were seen in the distance, he said to Boyaslav, "Now we are going to Red Island, to a king who has a very ugly daughter, but have no fear in the world of her. When she casts eyes on thee, say that thou art seeking a bride, but before choosing, thou must consult thy father. Then the king will offer thee a present. Take nothing but a piece of rope for thy bridle." Boyaslav promised obedience. When they came to Red Island, the road sank in the sea, and the horse hurried on. Boyaslav left him on the meadow outside the city and went straight to the king's castle, where he was courteously received. "Where art thou going, noble prince?" asked the king. "In search of a bride," answered Boyaslav. But the king led him to his daughter. She was so ugly that Boyaslav was frightened. "Does she not please thee?" asked the king. "Oh, she pleases me," said Boyaslav. "Pleases me greatly. But first I must talk with my father." The king smiled. He led his guest to the super chamber, where he was entertained in a king's fashion. Boyaslav wished to go very soon, but the king took him first to his treasury and offered him much gold and silver. "Thanks to thy grace," answered Boyaslav. "My father has great treasure also, but if thou wilt make me some present, give me a piece of rope to repair my horse's bridle." "Oh, I will give thee a splendid bridle and saddle," said the king. But Boyaslav answered, I wish no rich outfit on the road. It is an enticement to robbers." The king tried to persuade him, but he could not. Then he had a rope brought, which was very slender, but very long. So Boyaslav was hardly able to bear it away. After a kindly farewell to the king and the princess, he hastened down the road, where the horse called from a distance, "Thou hast done well. Now wind that rope around my body." And Boyaslav opened the bundle, and a whole hour passed before he could wind the whole rope around the horse. When he had finished, they hurried to the sea, where the horse said, "Throw a second apple into the sea." "But it would be such an eternal pity," said Boyaslav. "I tell thee, throw the second apple into the sea," repeated the horse with a stern voice. Boyaslav obeyed. That moment, 500 miles of road rose from the waves of the sea, along which the horse rushed like the wind day and night, night and day. And when the domes of the great city were visible in the distance, he said to Boyaslav, "We are now come to the Green Island, ruled by a king who has a daughter not beautiful and not ugly, though thou wilt say that thou art looking for a bride. But before choosing, thou must consult thy father. And when thou art taking leave, the king will offer all kinds of jewels as a gift. Accept nothing, but ask for the cloth of the table from which thou hast eaten." Boyaslav promised this. So when they came to the Green Island, the road sank in the sea. The horse hurried toward the city. The horse remained in a meadow outside the gate. Boyaslav went to the palace, where he was welcomed by the king and presented to the princess. "What brought thee to me?" asked the king. "I am in search of a bride," answered Boyaslav, looking at the princess, who seemed pleased at his words. "And hast thou found one?" asked the king. "Well, not yet," said Boyaslav. "Does my daughter not please thee?" The princess blushed. "Oh, she pleases me greatly," said Boyaslav, "but first I must talk with my father." The king frowned at these words, and the princess was flushed with anger. But Boyaslav changed not and was so courteous that the king grew ashamed and conducted him to the super chamber, where there was a small table covered with a poor-looking cloth, but upon which stood the choicest food and drink. Boyaslav ate with relish and ketchup and mustard. "But I'm afraid we must stop here. And only later will we find the final adventures of Boyaslav and his hunt for the princess of his dreams. So thus I will end tonight's adventure from Boyaslav, another fine ancient Slovak tale. What say ye, cat? Hello, cat. Well, I suppose that that means we've lost the cat somehow. And in that case, I will say, I hope you enjoyed tonight's adventures. Adventures with gods and goddesses. Adventures with devils and peasants and kings and princes and princesses and talking horses and bewitched devils. Ah, the ancient stories abound. And I hope that you've enjoyed yourself tonight in the Bard's Grove. And as we say here in the Bard's Grove, merry meet, and merry part, and merry meet again. These stories are brought to you through the efforts of Cat and Lantern. Cat is also a dream consultant, an astrologer, who is available for consultation. And I am a multimedia producer and web marketer. So if you could use some services, please understand that these efforts that we put on for your enjoyment are brought to you by these two fine people. So I hope you'll consider contacting us, letting us know that you like the shows. We always appreciate that. And we hope you join us next week when the Bard's Grove brings you more of the ancient and the timeless. Please join us again. Thank you so much. I'm one of your hosts, Lantern, and I hope you've enjoyed the show very much. This is Lantern from the Bard's Grove, signing off.